Thank you for joining me today, Krista. You sound like a very busy lady. Let's start with what led to your becoming an herbalist, and we'll just kind of see where the conversation goes.
All right. Well, it's great to be on the podcast, and I'm excited to chat with you about herbal medicine and where my journey has started. I would say my journey, it's kind of a multi-phase journey, I would say. I started getting interested in herbal medicine when I lived in Quebec. I had met a herbalist there who showed me some herbs on a forest walk, and I was so fascinated at that time with herbal medicine, with primitive skills, building and being more hands-on with the earth. And during that time, I was living in the forest, and I started to collect herbal medicine and started to treat minor ailments, like cuts and scrapes with my friends, minor burns. And it was just a passion that really grew. Very different from what I was doing before. I was a kinesiologist before, and I was working with children with autism. But I found that there was a connection there between kinesiology and working with children with developmental disabilities and the work I do now with reproductive health. So it's been a really nice kind of connection between the two different careers I've had before. Mm-hmm. So before I was a herbalist and before I was a kinesiologist, I was an artist, and I was always interested in harvesting and collecting things. I have a farm in my family, and my art was very much a land-based art. I would do mosaic pictures with berries and twigs and different types of grain. My father is a farmer, so had lots of different access to grain. And so there'd be wheat, there'd be barley, canola, and with different branches. And so I'd always be out with my harvesting basket collecting different colors from nature. So little did I know, I was collecting herbs that also had medicinal value. So while I was using them for my art during the time, later on, I started to harvest them for the medicine. And that's really where the transition from harvesting for art to harvesting to medicine to making the medicine really kind of inspired my practice of herbal medicine and decided to pursue this as a career.
Awesome. I can see the thread. That's neat. So what training have you had?
Well, before I did my 3-year diploma program at Pacific Rim College, I did a 4-year Bachelor of Kinesiology. At that time, I was more leaning on becoming a physiotherapist, but I knew that I wanted to work more with the earth, and I thought for a while to do naturopathic medicine, but I found the college in Victoria, BC, and they focused just on herbal medicine, which is what I did want to focus on. So I've completed the 3-year Diploma of Phytotherapy program, which is the most recognized program in Canada in terms of phytotherapy, which means plant therapy, herbal medicine.
You beat me to it. I was going to ask you that.
I know most people don't know what phytotherapy is. It's a term that's used a lot more in the UK. And so we continued on with using phytotherapy at least in the college at Pacific Rim College, as the instructor who started, the dean of the program, started the college. He trained in the UK. So we have brought over a few UK instructors as well. So phytotherapy and the language has really crossed over into Canada.
Cool. The other term that I would like you to define for our listeners, just in case they don't know, is kinesiology.
Kinesiology is the study of movement. So most of the time people get into it to do physiotherapy or some sort of physical education, maybe physical activity, working in a training center. But my program I did was quite unique. It was focusing on disabilities and access to not only access to activity, but access to just life activities. So access to getting groceries, access to getting around with transportation. I was really interested in this because my brother has a physical disability. Mm-hmm. It was an acquired physical disability, and we were a big skiing family. And so after my brother had his injury, he broke his back, we were able to get him onto sit skiing. And that really led me into this whole path of working with people with disabilities. So I focused primarily on physical. And during my program, I got really interested in developmental disabilities. So children with autism, children with ADHD, that sort of thing. And that's kind of what the work I had done for quite a while.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Great. So what's your focus now? What's your passion now with your, how, where have you taken your practice? How long have you had a private practice, by the way?
I'm going into my fourth year of private practice. So it's been, was it 33? Oh, now I forget. we'll pause that. I have to count the years. Oh my goodness. Why can't I count the years?
Oh, that's okay. So around 4 years, but yeah. So I mean, it sounds like you've got a good
3 to 4 years.
You've got a good body of experience. And has your focus changed in those 3-4 years, or have you always known what you wanted your focus to be?
When I was studying at Pacific Rim College, I was surprised at how interested I was in reproductive pathology. It wasn't my initial thought. I initially thought I was going to work more with children with autism and provide herbal medicine for that kind of population group. But I found that really the base, and when I started looking at research, a lot of the research that's coming out is a lot to do with the reproductive health of both the mama and the papa when they are a child. And I realized for me, my inspiration is that kind of conception and really trying to create a healthy generation right from the start, right from the sperm and the egg. So I was really interested in reproductive health, I would say, right from the beginning. I was always interested in midwifery, and I thought to become maybe a doula at one point. So a lot of my research into herbs and the people I was helping at the college had some sort of reproductive pathology. And from there, I just expanded into my practice. So I went back to school as, you know, definitely in my later years. And when I graduated, I was ready to go out the door. And I knew that I wanted to do reproductive pathology. So I focused my practice directly on that. And most of, I would say 90% of my patients, maybe 95% of my patients are coming in for reproductive pathology, hormonal imbalances.
So it sounds like from what you said, do you see both men and women then? You're working with both the sperm and the egg?
Ideally, in a fertility setting, I really would like to work with both the male and the female, so both partners that are trying to conceive. That was definitely my preference. I do find, though, that herbal medicine in my practice tends to be mostly female-dominated. I think it's just they're more interested in not even just, I don't do just fertility. I also do just any kind of hormonal pathology. I do a lot of post-pill. So people that are coming off the birth control pill, kind of helping to regulate the liver, help to regulate the hormones. A lot of times people are put onto the pill because of they have a hormonal pathology. And unfortunately, the medical community don't really have any solutions. They will just put people onto the birth control pill. And usually when those women are coming off the pill, that's when those pathologies will come and rise up again. And so I do a lot of regulation.
You know, we didn't talk before this interview about what we were going to focus on. However, I just recently talked to someone who had to get off the pill. And she's having problems. And maybe this would be a good focus for some of our conversation is what, from your perspective, how you help people.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. So typically when someone's coming off the birth control pill, I don't like to be too pushy with hormonal-based herbs. So in herbal medicine, there's lots of different avenues in which we can treat a condition, which is why I was really drawn to herbal medicine. It's not just treating the branch, it's really treating the root treatment, the root problem that's causing these different things to come up. So some things that can happen post-pill is acne. So that's one of the big things that happen is post-pill acne can rise up. There's also can be some weight gain or weight fluctuations that can happen. Oftentimes too, this is really common is that often women won't get their cycle back immediately. So I've worked with some people with, you know, they didn't get their cycle back normally for 3 months, 6 months, a year, 3 years, and I work with some people that haven't had a cycle since their pill for 5 years. So really,
wow, that long.
Really trying to bring.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah, for some people, it just, you know, and usually behind that there is a hormonal condition. So they might have PCOS, so polycystic ovarian syndrome. They might have something. They might just be not ovulating for other reasons. So I really work initially when someone's coming off the pill. I really focus on liver. So the liver is where we process all of our hormones. And our hormones are like chemical messengers between different parts of our body. So we have hormones that come from the brain. We have thyroid hormones. We have adrenal hormones. And then we have our sex steroid hormones as well. And all of those hormones need to be processed via the liver to be excreted into the bile and then eliminated out of the body. So I really work on liver to help normalize any kind of hormonal imbalance. Sometimes what happens with the pill is that those hormones that we're putting into our body, they can hide in different areas. They really like to hide in fat tissue. And so even though you discontinue the pill, you're still having an outside influence hormonally because it's hiding in your body. So really trying to work with weight, trying to move that the hormones out of the body, and then getting your own endogenous hormones, so the hormones that we ourselves make, to start fluctuating properly. Because the hormones are really like this symphony. They rise up, and that rise up signals the next kind of phase to happen. And so if we don't get these fluctuations happening, they won't signal the body to do the next part. So we have different phases in our cycle that all are initiated because one phase happens before the second phase.
Fascinating. Mm-hmm. I love this. This is great. So so you're talking about hormones that hide in fatty tissue. So are you saying then that that they're slowly being released into the body or the bloodstream or into the cells of the body after a person has stopped taking the pill?
Yes, absolutely. So birth control pill, the hormones that are in that pill, it depends on which type and what kind of hormones, but they do tend to hide in fatty tissue and they will seep out. So typically it's the tissue that it's the pear-shaped women. So the woman that's got a little bit more on her hips and around the abdomen, that's where the hormones like to hide out a little bit more than other areas in the body. So that is definitely something to consider. And there is other things too. Gut health is actually really important for hormonal excretion as well. So if we don't have, if we have too much of certain types of bad bacteria, even if the liver has done the full job of processing the hormone for elimination, in the colon, that gut bacteria can take that inactive hormone and activate it back into the body. And when it activates it, it makes it into a stronger hormone. And this usually happens with estrogen. So estrogen will be coming out of the body. The gut bacteria takes it, makes it stronger, and that can have a lot of negative effects. So estrogen is one of those hormones that in excess can cause heavy cycles, clots, breast tenderness. There's a few conditions that are associated with high estrogen, like endometriosis, fibroids. And so a lot of times we see excess estrogen in the cycle.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. The gut microbiome is a subject that I've been studying quite a bit in the last few months. And I'm really hoping to get someone who's an expert in that on the podcast soon.
Oh, that'd be wonderful.
I think it's a really, really important topic. I was introduced to the gut microbiome by I listened to David Perlmutter's book, Brainmaker. And that was quite an eye opener. So yeah, this is all interrelated.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. So I wanted to ask you back to the liver. So when you said that was your focus, kind of your focus when people are coming off the pill, are you cleansing, detoxing, rebuilding? What approach do you take here?
Well, there's a couple of different things that I look at with when someone's coming off the pill. So I definitely address the liver. So the liver, I'm thinking about helping to detoxify, so helping to move hormones out of the system. There's a few herbs that are very specific about helping to move especially estrogen out of the system. And then I'm looking at kind of supporting the liver too and just giving it, you know, if we've been putting in a pharmaceutical, because birth control pill is a pharmaceutical. We often don't consider it a pharmaceutical, but it is. We always just need a little bit extra liver support. So I'm just using some herbs like milk thistle. That's really going to give some liver protective, liver restorative action. And then herbs that are going to be more specific about moving estrogen out of the body. Then also with some liver herbs, also kind of colon herbs, we're going to help to move the stool out of the system. Just to make sure that someone's having a healthy bowel movement, that they're excreting 1 to 2 times per day, because the longer the stool sits in the intestine and the colon, there's more of a chance it could get, those hormones could get put back into the system. So that's my main two focuses. When I'm looking at liver, I really think about how we're moving our excretions out of the body as well. So I'm really focusing on those two aspects. And in the nervous system. So oftentimes when someone's coming off the birth control pill, there's usually, you know, the birth control pill has lots of ups and downs with it, and discontinuing a hormonal based pill, which does affect our mind and our mood and our emotional stability. I really want to make sure the nervous system is very well taken care of, that that person is feeling calm, that they're having some relaxation, that they're not feeling up and down emotionally. Because what's really important to understand with hormones is that our hormones that help us digest, so we have digestive hormones, and our sex steroid hormones, the hormones that are used in our reproductive cycle, those two hormones are the least important compared to our stress hormone. So if we need to make a stress hormone because we're running from a tiger, aka we have a million emails to go through, and we're in high stress, making reproductive hormones and making digestive hormones are just not important in our body. And so we're going to
kind of becomes low on the list.
Exactly.
Doesn't it?
So if we're running from a tiger, we're not digesting and we're not reproducing. And really, our running from our tiger in our day and age is opening our emails and having, you know, 50 plus emails to read and having kids, you know, that are, you know, need to be fed and taken to school and taken to soccer and a husband and, you know, getting to the job and showing up without having baby spit on your shoulder and all those things that, you know, and getting groceries and, you know, we just went through Christmas. So that's a stressful season. So a lot of times stress is a major component in reproductive issues. And that's really those two areas is what I focus on. And then after that, if I don't see, there still is a hormonal imbalance after addressing the liver, after addressing the nervous system, that's when I'm going to add in hormonal based herbs. So it might be herbs that are going to stimulate ovulation. There might be herbs that are going to work on the brain for helping with communication. Because that hormonal pathway, so in a woman's cycle, everything gets signaled by the brain. And if the brain doesn't have the signal from the ovaries, the next phase isn't going to start of the cycle. So if we think about the woman's cycle as being a cycle, we need to have triggers to stimulate the next phase in the cycle. And so there's herbs that I'll use that are very specific at triggering the brain's response.
Awesome. I get it. You know, this is, I'm getting this sense that a lot of women are going to be very interested in what you're talking about here. And not all of them can come and see you. Do you do any consultations over the phone or Skype?
Yes, absolutely. So I do Skype consultations. And I do travel a little bit in the summer too. So I'm actually planning on going to be in the Kootenays for a little bit in the summertime. So I'll be there doing some consultations, but absolutely online Skype consultations. I'm also hoping in the near future, which is probably looking like sometime in 2017, maybe 2018, I'm trying to get up an online format so that I have like a workshop course that I offer that's called the Moon Goddess Workshop Series. That talks about cycle tracking, that talks about the different phases of the cycle. I'm hoping to have that on an online format. That's going to talk a lot about how to track your cycle for fertility, tracking your cycle so that you can avoid pregnancy, herbs that you can help to normalize the cycle, and then I'll be offering consultations through that program. So that's my hope for 2017 to get it up and running. So we'll see hopefully that's going to happen at one point. 2017 looks busy, but
I think it will happen. It has to. I think it's a great idea because you are taking such a holistic, complete approach in my opinion. When I first went to nursing school, midwifery was, I was already an herbalist myself. I wanted to be a midwife and, you know, things just, when I got out of nursing school, there were no openings in OBGYN to, you know, cause you have to go to the hospital, you know, start in the hospital and all that. And, I ended up in psych and, and many other areas, but, that was really what I wanted to do was, become a midwife. Okay. So what kind of overall general reproductive health, mental, emotional health, what kinds of things might you recommend to, we'll just stay with women here, but I guess it could be men too, to women who are feeling stressed, what might be some, even if it's exercises, something that people can do now to start to make a change in their life?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So definitely herbs are a wonderful addition. So lots of health food stores have different types of herbs that you can access, whether in tea form or tincture form, which is an alcohol-based extraction. Those are really, you know, great start. But again, not everyone has access to herbal medicine. One thing I do like, though, about herbal medicine is that herbs all have this energetic component. So if you think about, you know, lemons and how they make you feel compared to like mint tea, how it makes you feel versus chamomile tea, all of them have a different energetic component. So some of the herbs, they actually help to move the stuck energy. Other herbs are going to help to bring groundedness to a person. So if someone's feeling a little bit ungrounded, maybe they've been traveling for a bit or shifting careers or shifting maybe places where they're living. We have herbs that are going to help with kind of bringing that grounded center feeling. There's herbs that are going to be calming to the mind, calming to the body. So, you know, herbs have this energetic component. And I would say they work quite deeply on that mental, emotional level, especially in drop dosing. So I would say that's definitely an area for that emotional component. But I also recommend to my patients, in between taking their herbs, to do different activities. So obviously exercise is going to be really important. But one thing I really recommend is doing a late night walk under the moon. Mm-hmm. So when the moon comes out, and so it's just getting more connected with the moon phases, especially for women who are trying to reconnect with their cycle. So maybe in the past they viewed their cycle in not a positive light. Maybe they had pain. Maybe they were having some cramps and clots and heavy bleeding. And for them, when they were bleeding, their moon time was always a really discouraging, very emotional, you know, sensitive with cramping, time for them. And they didn't really view it as a positive experience. I'm really trying to go to change the way that we perceive our cycle, our bleeding cycle, to be a more of a positive experience. And part of that is that we live in a world where we have fluorescent lights or we have some sort of lighting all the time that we can access. For most of at least Western world, we can turn on a light and we have access to light. And while that's amazing, what isn't so amazing is that we're losing our connection to the sun, the day, and the moon, the night schedule. And we really are moved by the moon. So, you know, in history, we have this time when all the women would bleed and ovulate together based off of the moon cycle. And just like the moon affects the waters in the ocean, the moon does affect the waters within us, so our blood within ourselves. And so I really try to connect my patients to the moon cycles, paying attention to them a bit more. So going out for a walk. And part of my goal with that walk is that there's no intention, that they're going out and they're walking slowly. It's not about doing 3 laps around the block. It's not about timing themselves and getting their heart rate up. This is really just about a walk where they're out and they're looking up at the moon and they're pondering and they're kind of doing like a nighttime routine.
So way I would describe this, what you're saying, is that it's not about doing. It's about being.
Yeah, absolutely. It's about being.
And one good thing would be just also if someone's doing this and they find because they've got so much going on in their life that their minds, you know, they're having trouble stilling their mind, just focus on your breathing.
Absolutely. Yeah. Another one too that I like is working within the earth. So part of my work in consultations is about empowering my patients to start growing their own herbs. So I'll try to, when it's in season, I'll bring seeds or little plant starts for my patients. So they themselves are starting to connect with the plant energies in their house or in their backyard. But really, if I can get them into the yard and growing or going out for a hike and harvesting, that's such a connection for myself. And I find for my patients as well that if they can get back into the rhythms of nature, they themselves are going to come back into rhythm.
Yes, and you can always recommend to people to come and help out in my herb, vegetable, fruit, organic gardens because I have way too much work. So I'm always open to help. Oh, great.
Although I have three gardens, so I might have to take some patients to help in my garden too.
Okay, I'm second in line. Okay, so what about, I'm thinking, okay, where am I taking this? I'd like to see if you could come up with some specific recommendations, herbal-wise or whatever. How about for someone who, it just seems like everybody's overworked and overwhelmed and, you know, just feeling not grounded. What would you recommend? Easy things that they could get either as teas or, you know, tinctures or what herbs would you recommend?
I really love my grounding tea formula. So it can be a tincture as well. It has just three herbs. It's one of my favorites. It kind of almost has a bit of an Earl Grey taste. So I find that one's nice for people that are used to kind of like a black tea, that kind of bitterness. So so it's wood betony and vervain. They're both really great grounding herbs. They're also going to be an antidepressant. We obviously right now don't have a lot of sunshine, especially on the West Coast where it's raining a lot and lots of overcast. So I find that that's a really nice herb, the vervain, to have as an antidepressant. But they're nice and bitter. They're good for digestion, and they also just help to pull someone into their body. And then I add a little bit of rose, that kind of a bit of that floralness that you kind of get with Earl Grey as well. So that bitter with the floral. So for people who are really into Earl Grey or kind of a black tea, I find that's an easy transition into getting them into that tea. But really any kind of nervine herb at this time, lemon balm is a really lovely one for this season as well. Lemon balm, it has this nice uplifting lemony flavor. We call it a thymoleptic, which means it improves the mood, which is a great word, thymoleptic.
I love it.
And really any of our nervine herbs. So even dietary, you can be doing things. You know, oats have a lot of B vitamins, so that's really good for the nervous system as well. I find that protein is really great for blood sugar crashes. Blood sugar, especially when people are drinking a lot of coffee and they have a lot of sugar in their coffee and they run around, protein is really going to help stabilize the blood sugar, which once the blood sugar goes up and down, that can cause hormonal pathologies. And it also just causes a lot of emotional up and down as well.
Yes, I agree. I only use stevia in my coffee. I use dark chocolate stevia in my coffee. I used to use vanilla, and then I found, I think it's Now Foods has this dark chocolate. And I've had people try it who don't even like stevia, and they're like, oh my God, this tastes so good. So I keep a bottle of it in my purse because you just never know when you might need a little dark chocolate stevia. And it just, I mean, it's like a dessert to me, but you know, stevia is healthy. You're not getting any calories. You're not getting any of the negative side effects of sugar. And I know a lot of people find stevia to be, it's not palatable for them, but I think most people either use too much because there's a very fine line with stevia of too much and it gets really bitter. Sometimes you just have to develop a taste for it. So I usually tell people just try a little bit and gradually work up. But I use it in all my cooking and everything. I love stevia.
Nice.
Okay, so we've got some great herbs. Now, your grounding tea. If maybe somebody doesn't feel comfortable putting those herbs together themselves, somebody wants to order something like your grounding tea from you, can you mail that out to them?
Yeah, absolutely. Right now, I mostly mail out to my patients, but I'm open. I don't have an online store yet, but that's something that I'm looking at into the future as well. I've been very busy with just my practice and teaching at the college that keeps me busy for 5 days plus a week. I'm looking at getting my practice a little bit more automated with my website and having packages and programs, workshops available, and having my herbal medicine accessible as well. So that's my goal again for 2017, is to get things a little bit more accessible, because not everyone lives in Victoria and has 3 herb stores and a college and 4 practices.
Right. Yeah. No, that's very true. You are a fount of information. I actually didn't realize how much expertise you have in this area. And I'm really hoping that you will come back and we'll pick another topic and delve deep into it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I would love to.
That would be fun. So on the website, realjanine.com, there will be links to you and how people can get a hold of you, into your bio and all of that. I'm really, really grateful for you taking the time to, this is actually what, our 4th try to have an interview.
My pleasure. I love coming on, and I'm very passionate about education. So that's a big part of what I want to provide to my community and to the online community as well. So I'm really excited to do more podcasts and share more of my knowledge with TheRealJeanine.com.
Awesome. So thank you so much. And we'll talk again soon. Take care, Krista.
My pleasure. Take care.